Quick update, I'm launching a new course for 2025. It's Foundations of Application Security. It's a two-day bootcamp covering everything you need to become a well-rounded AppSec practitioner. There's both public and private courses available, and the best part about it all is taught by me. So if you're interested, just send me an email, call@galahcyber.com.au, or say hi on LinkedIn if you can have a chat about it.
Hi, I'm Cole Cornford, and this is Secured, the podcast that dives deep into the world of application security. Today, we're joined by Jeanette Gill, Principal Customer Success Manager at Secure Code Warrior.
But I just remember this customer saying to me, you know, Jeanette, I went into the canteen the other day. I was in the lunchroom. There's a table of developers sitting in the corner. As soon as I walked in, they were like, shh, you know, here comes AppSec. And he felt a little bit like, guys, I'm here to help you, you know?
Jeanette comes from a non-technical background, having worked in the aviation industry for over a decade. When she made the leap into AppSec, it was her great communication skills, her boundless enthusiasm, and focus on providing a great experience for customers which proved invaluable. We discussed some of the common misconceptions about application security, the uneasy relationship between developers and AppSec teams, the potential for AI to change our industry, being a champion dragon boat racer, and plenty more. So let's jump right on in. Hey everybody, I'm here with Jeanette. Jeanette, how are you going? This beautiful Wednesday.
Hello, Cole. How are you? Great to see you. I wish we saw more of each other face to face and not virtually. We always have such a good time taking selfies together with that great history of always reenacting our very first photo.
Yeah, from OWASP New Zealand. Was that 2020?
2019.
Was it the end of 2019, was it?
Yep, it was. Yep.
That's like, it's crazy to think about that. I'm pretty certain I came back from a holiday around Japan and like with my friend James. And then I just had a few weeks and went to Auckland for OWASP NZ. I came back and people started like segregating on my flights back about whether they looked Chinese or not.
Right.
And it was about that time, I think. Yeah, because it was COVID. Yeah, seriously, that was at Sydney Airport. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy times, right?
Unbelievable. Hey, look, I owe OWASP a great, some gratitude there because that was just a great trip. That was just a great meetup. We had a great time and just meeting everybody there. It was fabulous.
Yeah.
We need more of that.
I miss John DeLeo. It'll be good to catch up with him whenever he's around next. I think is he still with OWASP?
I have done some events for him at OWASP. I think we did Christchurch, we did Auckland, but I think he has moved, but he's still very heavily involved, I believe, in OWASP. Yeah. He was actually at CyberCon 2023 in Melbourne, but I didn't get a chance to meet up with him. It was a really busy event.
Yeah, I didn't get to go to CyberCon this year.
Oh, that was fabulous.
Yeah. Okay. Dig it in. Rub salt in the wound.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Adding salt to the wound.
Yep.
Shake.
I had to take care of my missus was getting a runny nose and like, I don't think it's a good idea to just say, I'm going to go and have a high school reunion for 4 days. And yes. Then like, while she's starting to get sick with two kids. So I was like, nah, I'm just staying at home. Awkward. Being taken care of the baby. Thankfully, she didn't get anything serious, but like, you got to do the right thing as a dad, right?
Yep, absolutely. Well done, Cole.
Thank you. I'm very, I feel ethically.
As a mother and a wife, well done.
Oh, okay. I'll take this. You should see, I've got a lot of brownie points right now. I've done so many good things for her. So but anyway, away from brownie points and onto birdie points.
Okay.
So the first question I ask everybody on my podcast is, what kind of bird are you and why?
All right. So what kind of bird am I? All right. So firstly, I'd have to think about, okay, I'm not really a bird person, even though I'm very grateful. We should all be grateful to birds. I mean, they provide us with food, decorative feathers. For some people, they provide companionship.
I'm just going to mark that down. Not a bird person.
That's right. Not a bird person. But look, you know, they do a bit of labor. We have the pigeons that carry the messages and the falcons that do the hunting. They even do a bit of pest control.
And the galahs that do AppSec.
Oh, I must, yes, tick in the box. I must remember that. I love bees, but also birds pollinate. It's not just the bees. But to answer your question, Cole, I would have to say, reviewing the entire bird world out there, I would be a peacock. I would have to say a peacock. I choose a peacock. And it's not because I like to strut my stuff. And it's not because I think I'm, you know, drop dead gorgeous. You know, hear me out on this one. So peacocks with all their beautiful feathers, I see those feathers almost as like, you know, strands of information, you know, all this beautiful, you know, from all the, you know, things I've done in my role in terms of experience and knowledge that I've gained and having seen how organizations roll out APSEC programs. There's a lot of information I want to share with them and give them to be successful and achieve their success criteria and their goals. And I believe each feather is an element in me, you know, providing an organization or a customer with the knowledge that I've gained. So here's a feather, and I'm going to help you, you know, achieve your success criteria. It's all about sharing and sharing the knowledge, and the knowledge is the beauty.
So you collect feathers that the peacocks drop, or you just have a lot of feathers that are in your tail? Like,
yeah.
How far does this analogy go?
Yeah, if I'm a peacock, I've got a lot of feathers because there's a lot of stuff that I've learned in the last couple of years. And I really want to share that with, you know, get it out there. Because APSEC's not easy, Cole, right?
Oh, no, APSEC's very easy. That's why I run a business. It makes it even easier.
Oh, there
so,
you go.
You know, okay. You just tell people, just fix the code, done, solves, right?
There so, you? That's yeah, it. That's yeah. All you have to do. Yeah, just look at it. Know how to remediate it immediately.
Yes.
Without knowledge, preferably.
One of the things about peacocks is that the males have like the bright plumage, but female peacocks are actually quite color neutral. They're gray and elegant and beautiful, but they're not outlandish and garish. So I think it makes sense to just have a lot of stories that you can talk to, but you don't need to put a lot of color into them, right?
Correct. Yeah, very good.
Ah, look at me following on with that metaphor real good. Like. So Jeanette, could you tell my audience a bit about yourself and just like, yeah, where'd you come from? Like, how'd you get into application security? You've got a storied journey, I'm sure. Lots of feathers.
Oh my God, lots of feathers. I need two peacocks to tell the story, really. So my background is, so in terms of schooling, I went to school in the US and in Germany. So most of my life I spent in Germany going to American high schools, you know, because my dad was in the military. And in high school, I did take a class in computer programming. And I was actually the only girl attending that class at the time. So looking back, I just, you know, or looking at some of my high school photos, I realized, gosh, you know, I was the only girl in that class. And it was all, you know, Commodore 64, basic language, you know, writing code, start line 10, then you do line 20 and you know, write something and then it goes back to line 20. So on and on and on and on. I mean, this was ages ago. And I just remember, you know, saving up all my money and buying, you know, programming books. And have you ever seen these books before, Cole?
Oh, to just reference Bibles, right?
In the old days where, you know, you'd get this book, you'd go to the bookstore and it had like thousands of pages and you had to copy every single line of code. And in the end, after like 5 hours of sitting there hacking away, you would hope you'd get a really cool video game out of it. Obviously, it never worked because somewhere in your line of code, you got something wrong and it didn't really turn out the way you wanted. So that was, you know, me going to school. And then I ended up going to, my dad retired and I ended up going to German school. So I went to German school, graduated. And then I ended up going to, in Germany, I ended up going to German business school. So I am bilingual. I speak English and German fluently. My mom is German.
Yeah.
yeah, genau. And, you know, I came out of German business school thinking, oh, I really don't want to do this boring stuff. I really do not want to get into business. So what I did was one day I got into the car and I drove to Frankfurt Airport and I picked up a arrival and departure schedule. And basically it was, you know, all the flights, when they arrived, when they left. And that was kind of, you know, how people knew, you know, which flight to book. Back then there was no internet, obviously. And in that schedule, in that arrivals and departure schedule, was every single airline that, you know, departed from Frankfurt or that had an office at Frankfurt Airport. So I applied to almost every airline in that book because I thought, oh, I want to work at the airport. That is so super cool.
It's funny how our perceptions change over time, right? Like I can't think of anything else. Like I would.
Cool. Okay, but I'm talking about 1992. I hope I haven't given my like age away there, but 92.
Always 21.
Thank you very much. I like that. And, you know, I applied and I ended up at British Airways, right? And looking back, Cole, I have to say those were the best years of my life. You know, being at British Airways, being at the airport, I loved going to work every single day. you know, checking in passengers' window or aisles, smoking or non. Crazy that you would think that people, you know, used to smoke back then.
Smoking or not, wow.
Yeah, and I'd have to deal with passengers that were like, I would like non-smoking. Do I have non-smoking? Yes, you do. You're in aisle 23. And then they would be like, well, which aisle does smoking start in? 24. And they would not be so very happy, right? So it was like, oh, those days. So I went on from checking in passengers, which I loved. I just loved talking with people, dealing with people. But my passion was actually being out on the ramp, being an aircraft load controller. So the load controller is actually that individual that is doing the calculations of an aircraft before it departs. So you have cargo, you have fuel, you have catering, you have passengers, dangerous goods. You're starting to calculate everything. The maximum takeoff weight of the aircraft needs to be correct. So when the pilot pulls back, you know, that the aircraft actually takes off and isn't still running along the runway. So it's a lot of calculation, very, very interesting, very demanding, very stressful, but I loved it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Moving on from there, I thought, okay, you know, what can I do next? So I became the PA to the airport manager, Frankfurt British Airways airport manager. Then I moved on. In that role, I was faced with managing expenditure, operations. And one of the things that is very heavy for airlines is tracking expenditure, right? Yep. Your expenditure. It's always a big...
Well, they're very thin margin businesses and like very... Absolutely. Yeah, it's like very hard. That's why they try to make it a sardine can nowadays. So
100%. And managing that. So British Airways built a system, their own in-house system that tracked airline expenditure. So the maximum landing weight, maximum takeoff weight, how much does it cost us to land an aircraft in Frankfurt, in Lisbon, in Vancouver, in Tokyo? So we managed all that. So I looked after that as well. And after doing a bit of that, I thought, my husband's English actually. So we thought, okay, what's the next move? Let's move to England. So I applied for a job, British Airways again, in-flight product and brand development manager. So this was a super cool job. And we basically looked after everything that had to do with Concorde first class economy and looked after food and beverage, you know. So I did a lot of eating. I did a lot of drinking of everything you can imagine. We looked after soft furnishings from the pillow to the napkins, to the forks, to the cutlery, any type of cutlery, the overnight kits, the meal service. Could the crew actually deliver? So lots of cool stuff. It was a dream job. I really enjoyed it. It was fabulous. And then I gave it all up.
Ooh.
And I gave it all up to move to Australia.
Oh, was that from your own volition or from your husband's?
It was a joint decision that we made. We decided, you know, what do we want in life? Where do we want to grow up? Where do we want to continue evolving as individuals? More importantly, you know, by that time we were married, and where do we want our children to grow up? I was not really keen on them growing up in the United States. And I thought there was more to offer than Germany. And I just loved Australia because when I worked for British Airways, I traveled a lot to Australia. And I did some work in Australia for British Airways as well. So we jointly decided we'll go. And so we did. And it's been great ever since. I'm very grateful, even though I have moved. This is now the third time we've lived in Australia. Other job opportunities that were offered to me and to James, we took those in other countries. And then we always came back. Something always brings you back to Australia, right? You've lived overseas, haven't you?
Yep. So, yes. And I came back. So
absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people do.
I'm stuck here. I got my two kids and my wife, so we're settled here. But like, no, it makes sense. Australia's a place to really raise a family. It's a really good environment to do it in. It's pristine, it's clean. I'm not sure whereabouts you are. You're the Gold Coast, I think.
I'm on the Gold Coast.
Gold Coast, yeah. So
better known as, depending on who you are, paradise.
Paradise or like the not Bris Vegas, but the other Vegas. So
not Bris Vegas. And you know, I always surfer's paradise. If as long as you keep your back turned to surfer's paradise and you look towards Burley, everything is paradise for me, at least.
Today must be like it's starting to get to the worst period because it'd be around schoolies.
Oh,
right?
Exactly. It's school holidays. It's a bit nuts. Yeah,
I remember those days.
Exactly.
So moving forward on a little bit. Yeah. So you said that, like, working in an airline, you would have had to develop a lot of skills around, like, you know, customer experience. I can totally see how you'd move into your, you know, over time into your current role and, you know, basically customer success and developer relationships at SCW. Would you want to expand a bit more on what you do nowadays?
Yes. So being a customer success manager, customer success in general, it's really, or like how Peter put it to me when he interviewed me many, many years ago, because when I saw the job description, I was like, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. I know nothing about AppSec. What is OWASP? Threat modeling? Is that a movie? I don't know. Moving along. But the most important thing is that relationship that you have with the customer, right? And wanting to achieve the best possible outcome for the customer, right? You know, building a meaningful and trustworthy relationship, and one where helping and guiding the customer when they really need it most is everything. Any customer success role covers that, but particularly in AppSec. Again, let's face it, it's not easy, AppSec. And again, I work with individuals that, I shouldn't even use the word individuals. Quite often, you know, you have a large organization where one individual is helping to drive a secure program for thousands and thousands of developers. And those AppSec people, how do they get treated? I had a meeting last with a customer. I'm getting a bit sidetracked, but I just remember this customer saying to me, you know, Jeanette, I went into the canteen the other day. I was in the lunchroom and there's a table of developers sitting in the corner. And they were, as soon as I walked in, they were like, shh, here comes AppSec, you know, and he felt a little bit like, guys, I'm here to help you. You know, I'm not here to like, you know, wrap you over the knuckles because of something I'm, you know. So he actually shared that with me, and it's a bit of a true misnomer, really. You know, AppSec comes walking down the hallways and everybody's like, don't make eye contact, you know, hope he doesn't come to my desk or hope she doesn't come to my desk. So I think for me personally, customer success, working with these individuals or with these teams, you know, that have multiple jobs and looking after multiple things, not just training, and helping them feel reassured and giving them, you know, enablers to success, to be successful. That's, you know, a bit of the role that I'm in. And certainly a lot of things keep me awake at night on how to help them and achieve value out of the purchase that they made. And the purchase they made is Secure Code Warrior. And by the way, it's a great purchase.
Well, there's your product pitch for today. That poor person, I see it a lot of the time where you have a business and they tend to have their first security hire, and they're lumped with everything from, we need to comply with all of these different standards and obligations, to we need to source penetration testing, to training engineers and endpoint and corporate security, data protection, so on and so forth. So like I've been in that position when I was at change.org and had to do, you know, a bit of everything under the sun. Mm. So I know what it's like to be the solo security engineer.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were ostracizing that individual is a bit sad to me, because I understand why a lot of developers have an adversarial nature with security. And that's usually from experiences of big enterprises in the past, or it's a siloed function where you have a lot of InfoSec people who do like assurance activities, and they basically work like, you know, come back and said, everything's terrible, why'd you do all of this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I don't see that those people don't really end up in tech companies all that often, or like smaller scale-ups, because it's almost entirely about, how do I as one person influence more broadly in an organization? And you can't do that by, you know, enforcing policies and being really strict with people, because then they'll find ways around everything that you implement. So, and like the previous hire at Change before me, before he moved on, did that exact approach. Is they did a very thorough audit and assessment, identified where all the gaps were, and then started hitting people with KPIs and measures, and everyone got upset and stopped working with him and found ways around everything. And then he got angry because no one was listening to him. So
yeah,
I don't think that's effective security, but you know, that's just me, just, you know, a bit of a glop. So
yeah, I think that also, I'm very passionate about, especially when I'm doing events or I run into developers, and I know firsthand from, you know, a previous role that I worked in that was a little bit more technical, developers, the type of constraints that they're under, you know, what's actually being asked of them, big projects, deadlines, budget, making it work because somebody in the organization has said it's going to be released on this date, regardless of what happens. And now it's like, instead of writing 12 lines of code to make it secure, I'll cut corners and I'll write just 4 lines of code. And maybe I'll just grab something from open source, and because it's already been written, why should I, you know, I can save myself 5 minutes. and then not having that skill to actually identify, in fact, that those four lines of code have, you know, quite a lot of vulnerabilities in them. You know, I shouldn't be copying and pasting those into, you know, something that's going to go out into production.
I wouldn't say that it's a skill issue. I think that universally, software engineers I encounter are smart people.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I drill into people's, like, especially security professionals' heads is that they're never malicious. Well, okay, they're sometimes they're malicious, but it's a vanishingly small. And if you're dealing with malicious internal developers, then you've probably got some higher level cultural issues you need to address first before you worry about security, in my view. But anyway, move away from that. But most people don't come to work and say, I'm going to intentionally introduce security vulnerabilities, or I'm going to make life hard for the security team. They say, how do I just get my job
done?
And developers are measured on their ability to produce features and get it time to market and make it good enough across a lot of different types of non-functional requirements where they need to satisfy. And you'll find that each developer tends to have one or two areas that they really care about and a bunch that they just do not in the slightest. And I know for me, I care very much about security. I care about usability. I care about code maintainability, but I'm not at all interested in cutting edge bleeding technology, internationalization, performance of code. That those kind of things just bore me. And I know that we can flip the exact same thing and say, there's a lot of developers out there who put security right down the bottom in the things that they care about as well.
Yeah.
So it's not that we need to teach every single developer to implement security. It's just that it's hard to teach people when they don't care about something. So.
Yeah. You know, for me, I would think that a developer, you're right, security is not front of mind. So maybe that approach called educating developers, you know, if you think more with a security mindset, you will have less vulnerable code coming through the pipeline. Your code will less likely come back to you to be fixed, to be reviewed, because there is an issue. Start early, secure codely, secure from the start, because then you're going to have more time to innovate and build awesome, awesome things, right? Awesome products. Because no developer wants to be told, hey, your code is a little bit messy. You need to go back and review it. And that code, you might have written that 6 months ago, 12 months ago, and they're just getting around to it now. And it's like, I don't want to fix this. This is like ancient old. I did this a year ago. No. But yes, you do have to do this. And you have to stop what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think that a lot of security people, you know, the queue just keeps increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they get overwhelmed because I'm anticipating that over time, we're going to see artificial intelligence really increase the cadence at which we are able to write code and make that code decent as well. But the activities that we traditionally invested in aren't going to scale unless they leverage artificial intelligence as well. So I'm interested to see, because I think that education's a really good spot to be filling that in, and AI can really accelerate education too. So is SCW looking at doing anything with AI to make it good? I think I read an AFR article a while ago that Peter's investing in there.
Yes, having a look. But I think at the moment, so we have done some testing. We have looked at AI writing code or asking, you know, ChatGPT to write a line of code. And up until now, every single time, it's not been something that you want to put into production. So I think over time, yes, I think things will get, it'll probably get better. It'll grow and it'll evolve. But I think at the moment, it's still early days, early days.
You know, it just occurred to me, I didn't actually explain what SCW is. So would you, I just want to give a bit of a background for listeners who haven't even heard of Secure Code Warrior, also known as SCW.
Yeah, so we call it, SCW, Secure Code Warrior. So it is Secure Code Warrior, not Secure Code Warriors. So my team, we are the Warriors, but the brand, I still come across people saying, oh, I really love Secure Code Warriors. What, are you talking about me and the people, or are you actually talking about the platform?
Well, Secure Code Lawyers, is that enough? I'm going to start a competitor business and be like calling it Secure Code Lawyers, and it's just going to send cease and desists to Peter. So
funny. So Secure Code Warrior, what are we? We're a platform, and a platform that you can implement in your organization to upskill your developers in secure coding practices. We're a tool that integrates with the developer's ecosystem, Jira and GitHub. You know, it's training, it's skills uplift, it's awareness. And what we provide, what SecureCodeWire provides, is also a vast amount of content, different ways of learning. It's not just videos, boring videos that kind of drone on, and we know how it works. People scroll the video ahead to get that tick in the box. I've seen it. I've done it.
Oh, me too. It's all the LMS stuff being like, you should know your obligations as an employee. Here's the emergency evacuation procedures for this office that you're in another state that you've never been to. And I'm like, ah, yes, let me just move this cursor to, I can't drag the cursor. Let me just type the JavaScript commands to get to that.
Exactly. But, you know, we have the videos as well. That's a way of learning. Some people like that, and it's graphical. But we allow developers to uplift their skills in their language, in their programming language and framework. So we're up to about 60 languages, programming languages and frameworks in the platform, and it's growing. So we're always listening to customers. How can we evolve? How can we meet your needs? And looking at new evolving languages that we can add to the platform. And all the content that your heart desires, really. And if we don't have it, share with us what you're looking for so that our team can look at it, investigate it, and possibly introduce that to the platform. So really, you know, creating a robust and secure organization starts with people. And those people are the developers, right? That's where it starts. So we really want to mitigate any of those known vulnerabilities, keep our organization safe and secure. And again, it starts with, you know, secure code.
Yeah.
And that's what really we want to enforce. So we have many integrations and partnerships. I mean, I could go on and on. So I'm going to stop here and say www.securecodewarrior.com. Have a look.
Not sponsored by SCW, by the way, guys. So just put it out there. But anyway, with your customers, what do you think the biggest challenges to rolling out like an education program is that you typically encounter? I think that you would have a lot more experience than most AppSec professionals with rolling out training programs, especially because you've like, let's maybe push it into two categories. How about we'll start with the single person, small to medium enterprise. What do they struggle with, and what do you recommend people do?
They struggle with getting buy-in.
Okay. Right?
We all want to be safe and secure, and it does take commitment and it takes support. So again, one application security person, 1,000, 2,000, 6,000, 10,000 developers, and nobody in the company, no developer is going to jump up and down and get excited when they're told, hey, we've got a new training program and it's called SecureCodeWire. Yay. No, there's going to be a lot of eye rolling and, oh man, I don't have time for this. I'm so busy already. So really we need to look at getting that support from the leadership team. So some of my most successful customers, and I'd love to rattle them all off right about now, but I'm not going to, but they're very well known to everybody, especially here in Australia, have been very successful when senior leadership, when the chief information security officer, when the head of engineering, when the chief technology officer understands the value and what we want to get out of the program and what we're trying to achieve and is supportive. And that comes from the top down. So the C-suite, the SLT, senior leadership team, they really need to get involved and be passionate about what they're trying to achieve. Now, when I talk about what to try to achieve or what we want to achieve, you know, what is your measure of success? What are we trying to get to here? And these AppSec people, individuals and teams, they need help. I've come across organizations when we're introduced, and my first question, some of my basic first questions are, okay, so what programming languages do you use in your organization? And Cole, you know this because you and I went through this together not too long ago.
Yep.
Which program languages and frameworks do you use?
Everything.
We use a bit of Java. Okay, there are like 5, 6, 7, 8 different types. Which one? Not sure. I'll get back to you. I love the question. I once asked a client, which languages do you use? Oh, Spanish, German. Oh, we obviously English. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
And you're like, duh.
Oh my goodness. Okay, oh, so Yeah, tell me what languages, you know, you're using. Tell me what tools are you using? Do you do, you know, are you scanning code, pen testing? Do you have a bug bounty program? I'm really not sure, Jeanette. Okay, well, those are things we need to find out. Okay, so what about your vulnerability management team? Have you spoken to them? Oh, I don't even know who that is. Well, you're going to have to find out, because my next question is, what are your top three, top five vulnerabilities? Because let's start targeting those and reducing those, because that's the pain right there. Let's get rid of some of that pain. Let's get a big dose of Panadol and reduce the pain. You know, and that's a struggle. That is a struggle for a lot of organizations that have people that do need help. And that's where we come in, Secure Code Warrior. Look, we're there to help and alleviate some of that pain and ask the questions and, you know, guide individuals to identifying what's the measure of success. Let's remove the low barrier to accessing the platform. Hey, do you guys actually have single sign-on? Because your developers don't want to do 1,000 clicks to get to the platform. They want to just be able to get to it, do what they need to do, and then get back to work. Reporting, REST API, use our REST API, pull the data that's important to your senior leadership team and start reporting back to them that what they've invested in is making a difference, is actually impacting the organization, because that's what they want to know. Secondly, and I feel very strongly, Cole, is recognize your developers, recognize the ones that are doing the right thing, that are upskilling, that are improving, that are vocal, that are sharing their knowledge. Recognize these individuals. And that's something you can do with the platform. And integrate. One of the one things I love is look at the integration. The integration, instead of bringing the platform or bringing the learning and education to the developers kicking and screaming, you know, bringing them to it, you know, bringing them to what you want them to do, why not embed it into their ecosystem? You know, we integrate with Jira and GitHub. Give it to them when they need it most. A developer's been given a ticket in cryptography, fixed mass assignment, a vulnerability. Oh man, I don't know nothing about that vulnerability. What do I do now? They go off and Google, right? Let me spend half an hour just reading up on this. No, stay in your environment. You're in the ticket. Click on get training now. Be directed to Secure Code Warrior and get the training when you need it most. Utilize your time.
A lot of things to unpack there. I'll start with probably my favorite one, which is a bit more helpful for everybody a bit more broadly, is the leadership team buy-in.
Yeah.
I don't think that you can have a successful security program unless you have a leadership team who not only recognize that security is important, but also can live the values that you're trying to set. And as long as security is considered an IT problem instead of a business risk or business challenge, then it gets really difficult to get other people outside of the IT domain to start, you know, making decisions with that context. You know, I know today we had an incident in the morning with one of the big telcos in Australia. And one of the immediate questions I was asked is this a cybersecurity thing, and why haven't they learned from the incident like 12 months ago? Like, that company is really aware that this is a business challenge that they need to be addressing, the resilience of their software systems, the resilience of their services. And I think that it could have been significantly worse than it was.
Yeah.
But I've, like, even as a dad, right? Mm. One thing I know is that sometimes I'm guilty of this. I think every parent is that I just want to sit there and read the AFR on my phone while my baby just lays there, just being like a baby, just being like, bleh. What I've now been noticing is that the baby makes an effort to go to the phone, and that made me sad.
Yes.
So I've picked up the phone and I put it in a separate room, and I just sit down, be present with her, and stack. We've got these toys, which are like these spindles that are made of plastic, you know, like, yep. Yeah. And then we just stack them on top of each other. And she likes to give me one, and then she gets angry when I take it away from her.
Right.
So like, I don't quite understand the baby mind. She's like, here, take this. And then I'm like, I didn't give that to you. I just want to show it to you probably. But the main thing is that by just like being there on my phone, I'm not present with the kids.
Yeah.
And so the kids see that I'm not there, and they want to do the same behaviors that I'm doing. Like, even with Cinny, you know, she watches TV when we're having dinner, and she asked me a very prudent question a few months ago, and she's like, I don't understand why you can sit there on your phone, I'm not allowed to watch television, like, why can't we both use screens? And I've said, that is a a very good reason, a good thing.
Yes.
Daddy's going to take his phone, put it away, and TV's not going to be on during dinner. And we've got a 50-50 success rate with that so far. But because, you know, I, as a business owner, work doesn't stop. But sometimes I do get the ability to go put the phone and just shove it in a different room. And yeah. But yeah, like I said, the leadership team buy-in is like really important.
Yeah.
Measuring the success and rewarding people, that's just table stakes, right? It's like the most, if you can't say, hey, I've invested money in this program and this is the outcome. And then reward people for doing the right thing. I don't know. That just seems like good management to me.
100%. And coming back to what you said about yourself and your daughter. So basically what's okay for dad is not okay for me. That doesn't work. You know, I don't understand that. And really quickly, I'll share with you one of a very successful customer, Secure Good Wear customer. This just blew my mind. And when we tracked the metrics, it was very interesting because this organization decided to implement a program. But before they put it out to the developers, before the developers were asked to go through this program, the CISO and I think the head of engineering, they both took the training and the exam first. They were the first ones to take it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was fabulous. So, and that was actually cascaded to the organization within the organization, basically from the chief information security officer saying, everybody, if you're a developer, if you are submitting code in our organization, I just took the training. I didn't do fabulously, like, you know, but I took it and I understand now where my strengths and I understand where my weaknesses are, and now I can target those. And I'm expecting the same of you. I'm taking this as at the same level as you are. I expect the same of you. And after that comms went out, so I worked very closely with my AppSec person there. I monitored it here, and I just saw the engagement level was like a rocket that just off the charts. Everybody jumped on, wanted to know what he was talking about. He did it. He's asking me to do it. Can I be better than him? It was great. That is senior leadership really leading by example and expressing why it's important to our organization, why you're doing this training. Fabulous, fabulous. And I share that with a lot of my clients.
Yeah, if they've got time to take an exam, do a tournament and listen to the material and, you know, like there's usually no excuse for a lot of the developers a little bit further down who say like, oh, I'm too time poor or I got to get these features pushed down. It's like, well, yeah, you've got 2 to 3 feature tickets that you got to push in the next 2 weeks. But look at the guy like 4 rungs above you who's managing like, you know, catastrophic risk of all of these things. And he's still finding time to give the busiest person more work and then it'll get done. Like that's a pretty common one I hear.
And the other thing I think need to keep in mind, especially in AppSec, and you know, all the AppSec people I work with, phenomenal. There are fabulous people in AppSec that are doing just amazing things. But let's be really open and honest and transparent here. Quite often, unfortunately, the developer community, you know, they don't want to see emails and comms coming from the AppSec team. So if you're in AppSec, if you're driving the program, leverage individuals like the heads of engineering. You need to leverage and build a relationship with those individuals that developers really respect and, you know, look up to, because when a message comes from them, you're going to see a lot more engagement, a lot more willingness than when it comes from you, unfortunately. And, you know, I hope in future that does change, because I think there's a bit of education that needs to be done in terms of, I'm AppSec, I'm here to help you. You know, I'm here to assist you, but that's not how it is right now. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I do in my consulting a lot of the time is to try to get people out of their technical area of expertise and start thinking about business challenges, business risk, and how you can support business functions while maintaining security.
Yeah.
And like it's a shift from working in the business to working on the business, right? If your headspace is always about looking at triaging results from the static analysis tool so I can send them to dev teams to go fix them, because I want to reduce the amount of false positives or false negatives, and that's how I'm contributing to the business.
Yeah.
If you think about on the business thing, what you're actually doing is decreasing the velocity that engineers are doing and increasing the likelihood that a business owner is going to risk accept that, right?
Like the AppSec person will say, I'm doing my job, this is great, and the business people will be like, these people just keep throwing tickets in my queue and slowing down development. So it's a difficult conversation to have with people because it's very outside their comfort zone to say, okay, all of this security and engineering knowledge and stuff that I've learned is all well and good, but now I need to go make friends everywhere and then like get those friends to start respecting me. And it can be as much as like actually committing code that can fix the vulnerabilities that they've identified. I know that I'm going to get some hate mail later by people saying, but you got line one and line two and segregation of duties. I think AppSec's in a bit of a weird spot where in some institutions that's totally fine, you absolutely do need to do that, but in other places that like you, especially the smaller ones and the not regulated ones, then what the hell, just go out there and just like write a couple of lines of code or build stuff that makes the life of developers easier. A few examples I can think of is like Slack has a self-service questionnaire for being able to have end product managers make educated guesses to effectively come up with a security scorecard about what it features they're building. And based on that, they can, choose to do things. Or the AppSec team has full-time software engineers dedicated to producing libraries that the rest of the organization consumes so that we don't have 500 people importing all sorts of different open source dependencies to say, yep, this is how I'm going to be managing input validation or output encoding or whatever. As an AppSec, like an AppSec person, I find it's a lot easier to have these conversations with head of engineers and stuff because like most of these people are extremely competent software engineers who are balancing a lot of different requirements and they have tremendous respect for security and understand its importance.
Agreed.
So they'll usually give you the time of day. Just don't go in there with a checklist that says you need to be doing every pull request regardless of size or risk or whatever, needs to have run static analysis, needs to have run an SCA tool, needs to all your devs need to be trained at least biannually. Otherwise they'll run off and be like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. So
exactly,
it's a challenge.
It is,
to change the industry's perception about how to approach these problems, because most people in Australia have just been taught, here are the tools, go use them, and instead of, let's think about how to build resilient systems. So, and that's a very different mindset.
It is. Agreed.
So I wanted to shift gears a little bit to coming to Australia. How did you get integrated into the security community? What steps did you take? Because I know when I was going to Victoria, Canada, in advance, I was already just reaching out to everyone I knew, like from all the podcasts and stuff, being like, who's here? Who's the who? I'm going to go meet everybody and say hello. Going to learn all the meetup groups and so on. But what steps did you take to get in there?
Well, I guess the biggest step was when I joined Secure Code Warrior, obviously, getting into application security in the industry. And getting to know people within each organization that I worked with, and then it was LinkedIn was probably one of the greatest tools that I had, even though I have to say before Secure Code Warrior, my digital footprint out there in the world is very minimal. So I'm not a big advocate of Facebook and exposing myself and putting myself out there digitally. But I realized very quickly that LinkedIn is a great place to get to know people. Once that the LinkedIn algorithm is in place and you're linked with all the right people in the industry, you start getting some really interesting feeds from people, and people are sharing information and where they've been, what they've done, what events are coming up, and you just have it. I learned a lot from LinkedIn, and I do enjoy looking at it, and I really very much enjoy seeing people that I know or in the industry add information to LinkedIn. The other is, as you learn and grow in the industry, organizations like OWASP, right? So for anybody that doesn't know, the Open Web Application Security Project, again, very grateful to the team in Auckland, because that's how Cole and I know each other, that's where we met. And Secure Code Warrior are a very big supporter of OWASP. So just getting involved and reading up, joining meetups, speaking to people at events. I love going to these meetups like, you know, CyberCon that we just had in Melbourne 2023, any of the developer meetups, events, B-sides. It's where you get to meet really interesting people and people that are really passionate about application security, making a difference, and just really wanting to know what you do, but also very giving in terms of the information and what they know. So I think that's where I've gained a lot of my knowledge. And also, you know, gaining knowledge, I have to look inwardly as well in terms of Secure Code Warrior, the team at Secure Code Warrior. There's so many people coming from so many different backgrounds with so much knowledge in pen testing and threat modeling and having done CS and sales, you know, in an AppSec industry. And you just learn from your colleagues. And I also learn from my customers. I have some customers that are extremely smart and have educated me along the way. And I would never say no to somebody sharing their knowledge.
That's one of the things I like about consulting is you get a variety of experiences and you meet a lot of different people. And, you know, some people are different levels of maturity, but it's refreshing when you encounter people who are just a lot better than you and you tell them that you're doing a good job.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. And things like this, Cole, honestly, webinars, when I see webinars pop up about really people that you're interested in and that know their stuff and they're giving a web, I love like the podcasts, you know, I'm a big fan of your podcast because a lot of the people that have already been on the show, I know them or I have worked with them or people that I would like to get to know. And then it kind of prepares me for when I do meet them, I know a little bit about them.
Ah, see, it's a customer success tactic to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely.
So I know earlier you were mentioning that you really enjoyed the initial interview with Toby and you had a question you wanted to ask me. So did you want to expand on both of those?
Yes. Okay. I do have a question for you, Cole, and it is just really basic. Is it developers, programmers, or engineers?
Yes. Okay. I'll split this into three categories. So I'd say that they're in orders of maturity.
Okay.
So I'd say that a programmer just solves a problem without any kind of context about, you know, they just get it done. A developer builds a solution to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And an engineer puts a lot more rigor around it for things like performance, scalability, maintainability, and so on. Everybody wants to label themselves as an engineer, but sometimes you just need a programmer. And in fact, a lot of the pen testers and like people who write like short scripts to automate things, I'd consider them to be programmers because, you know, it's just meant to solve a problem quickly in an automated fashion. It's not meant to be a system that lasts for 10 to 15 years, right? Like in a developer, yeah, you pay them to do a solution, but it's not about, oftentimes the solution solves a business problem, but it doesn't have the same level of constraints that you may need to consider. Like a, you know, you'd say that this is a C# application and I'm going to use all of these technologies because I'm quite familiar with it. And this is why it's how I'm going to architect that to work for you. But an engineer might say, cool, we're not going to use a relational database. We're going to be using a graph-based database for the reason that joins are logarithmically more complex over time. And we're going to, since this is a file sharing application, we're going to be looking at services where egress traffic is really cheap in the cloud to minimize cost, right? These kind of things aren't considered all that much by devs or by programmers because programmers just want to get stuff done. Devs solution, they build something, but they're not thinking about all of the rigor and other things that go around it. An engineer is always like really considering all of the different types of non-functional stuff to make systems robust and resilient, performant and all of that into the future. I would want to have a bridge like up to code that an engineer builds. I don't want to have a bridge built by a programmer.
Got it. Okay.
Unless I needed the bridge for 5 minutes, in which case, you know what? Just go get yourself two planks of wood, shove it across the creek. I'm cross. I'm never going to look at these planks of wood again. It's fine.
Once I've gotten to the other side and it crumbles behind me as I'm taking each step, then I don't care really. Yeah,
that's it. Like, exactly, like
as long as I get across.
The fairy tale bridges that you think about where like a wooden one where things fall out and stuff. That's how programmers work. So they solve the problem.
Okay. The reason I ask is because I have a client that said to me, so Jeanette, heads up. we are going to move away from the terminology developers, because naturally I use that terminology, right? Devs, developers. Or, gosh, who was it again? Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, so he was the CEO of Microsoft.
Yeah, developers.
Yeah, developers. Oh, man, whenever I watch that video or that YouTube, I'm thinking, wow, this guy's, I need some of which to move on.
He had a lot. Have you ever heard of the Ballmer peak as well?
No.
So there was a period of time where it had a graph in a Microsoft office where it was Ballmer drew it, and it was about the amount of whiskey that you consumed.
Right.
And if you had a little bit of whiskey, then your productivity would increase by 10 times. But if you had no whiskey, or you had like too much whiskey, it would be terrible. So the idea is that there's the Ballmer peak. So, and that's how early Microsoft got done. So go look it up. It'll come up with a graph on Google
I will have a look.
He's a character. I think he owns a couple of baseball teams as well. So wish I did, but.
Yeah, this developers. Wow, okay. That was a new one for me, but it was fun to watch. But the thing is this, the customer says, Jeanette, we're going to move away from the terminology developer, and everybody's going to be called engineer. So whenever I have a call now with this, I have to be very mindful. I'm very respectful of being like, okay, I'm on a call with XYZ, and I've got this big post-it, engineers, you know, on my screen. Be mindful. Yeah, because some people, programmers, developers, and so I thought, who better to ask than Cole?
Look, titles matter. And like, yeah. Whoever, I guess like back in the day, we'd have webmasters and then sysadmins. And now you'd say you're a DevOps engineer, right? But at the end of the day, you're just like, you know, operational or site reliability engineer, SRE. That's another common one.
Yeah.
I think a lot of industry just recognizes, if you use the terms programmer or developer, people see that as like, oh, this guy doesn't really understand like all of those other things. Like, they want to elevate the title.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee that there's a lot of software engineers who are actually programmers out there. So based on the code I've read.
All right. Got it.
All right, so let's move into the fast questions now. So are you ready? I hope that you tell me exactly what comes in your head. Here we go. First one. What's the best book to give a developer for Christmas?
The best book to give a developer? Oh, man.
I'm nasty.
Man, you caught me off guard. Because, okay, a developer. I don't know.
All right, let me change it. A software engineer. Yeah, how's that sound?
It's all the same to me, Cole.
I know it's all the same.
Oh my God.
I'm a shit stirrer.
Okay. If it was me, if you said, hey, Jeanette, if you want to give, you know, a book to somebody like yourself, then I'm ready for your question.
Well, how about that? Jeanette.
Okay.
You have to give yourself a book for Christmas.
Yeah.
What book would that be?
I would want two books, Cole, not just one.
Okay. All right. She's got high standards. Me.
The first book would be The Phoenix Project.
Yep.
So The Phoenix Project, I think it was written, it was Gene Kim. And the reason why I like this book is IT and DevOps, it's all learning about a team that needs to transform the way they work to save their company. But it's written in a story format. So for somebody like myself, or if someone's getting into AppSec, or somebody wants to understand how the whole business works when something breaks down and how to solve it, all the people, all the personas that get involved. I thought that was a really great book, you know, taking through the whole journey from when the crap hits the fan to solving it and getting the right people involved. So I thought that was a great book. The other book, I have to say, which has helped me understand, you know, the ecosystem, is from Tanya Janka, Alice and Bob Learn AppSec, right? It's out there. When it came out, I thought, oh, you know, and I've seen her speak and I like what she says, and it's really helped me in terms of learning. So anybody that's, you know, looking to learn the beginnings of, you know, the SDLC, the function, software development lifecycle, best security practices, anything about threat modeling, I mean, I find that very interesting now, and that I'm surprised that organizations, some that don't do it, because you can threat model a peanut butter sandwich, right? You can go to town on almost anything.
So many ways it can go wrong, like choosing the crunchy over the smooth, and picking the one that's
right.
Like, my wife really likes this one. It's called like Simply Peanuts, and I always like getting the craft ones. And the difference between the two is that one's full of sugar and one's entirely peanuts. And I like the sugar one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I like my peanut butter crunchy, but then I got to decide, oh man, you know, I still, from my early days having braces, I do have, you know, anyway, just is it going to get caught in my teeth? Do I have to brush right away? Do I need to carry a toothpick around for the rest of my life? I don't know. But so I really do like, I like those books. So if it was something I wanted to give to somebody like myself, yeah, I enjoyed reading those and it really put things into perspective for me.
I think they're both great books. I've seen The Phoenix Project recommended many times on this podcast. So,
oh, awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Go back and listen to basically every other episode and you'll see that book pop up like 4 or 5 times, I reckon.
Oh, so. Fabulous. Okay.
Gene Keane was actually in Sydney a few weeks ago.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh, interesting.
Talking to a few big institutions. So, hopefully we'll start seeing the resilience pop back, you know?
That would be nice. I liked it.
Cool. Next one. What's the most interesting talk you've heard in the last year?
The most interesting talk that I've heard in the last year.
Or just the best one that you've heard. It doesn't have to be interesting.
Gosh, there's so many, Cole. I feel a little bit not prepared for this one. Look, this is going to sound, I'm really sorry for anybody out there listening, and I know this sounds a bit cheesy, but I actually really, really enjoy listening to Here Comes our CEO, Peter Danyu. Peter is so passionate about what we do, what he's created, the importance of securing code, not understanding how SQL injection was created 20 plus years ago. And on the day it was found, it was fixed. And why is it still in the OWASP top 10? I mean, OWASP, it's now OWASP number 3. It moved from 1 to 3, right?
Yep.
But when he talks, he's very passionate. He's very articulate. He's just really a fun guy to listen to. And I know it's a bit cheesy. He is my boss. He is the CEO, but I don't get to see him a lot. And, you know, I'm not always there in all the talks. He goes around, he's, you know, global. So when I do get that opportunity, and I did have that opportunity in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago at CyberCon 2023, I thought, oh, I'm going to go see Peter, give a talk. And it's always great. And I always feel like I come away like I've learned something. So look, if anybody is ever out there and, you know, Peter Danyu, regardless of, you know, Secure Code Warrior, but if you see a talk given by Peter Danyu, and he's an ex-SANS instructor, so he knows his stuff. Go and have a listen. Go and have a listen. Yeah, so there you go.
I always like people that are focused on doing really good public speaking and know their material very well. It's pretty rare. There's a lot of people who are excellent at pen testing or code reviews or whatever, but finding people who are, you know, I guess that's why he's the chief exec of a, you know, good company. So
there you go. Yeah.
All right. Last one. Best recipe for a Friday night when you're lazy.
Okay.
This is a cooking podcast now.
All right. So, cool. I'll tell you this, a bit of context here. So, and you already know this. So I do a lot of dragon boat racing.
Yep.
So almost, you know, 5 times a week, I'm on the water doing something, getting ready for big events. And to come to the cooking bit, sometimes I come back and it's 8 o'clock and I want to eat something really nice and tasty, but it's got to be quick. It's got to be efficient and it's got to be high in protein. So I love peppered salmon that you can, you know, purchase. It's cold. Some brown rice, a nice big ripe avocado, put it all together, throw in a couple of tomatoes, throw in whatever you want. But I like salmon, brown rice, avocado, fabulous. So I'm actually salivating right now. Cool.
Here I am like thinking I'm remotely healthy by drinking bubbly water that's got some lime in it.
Yeah.
I cook paella because I just want to eat a lot of rice that's just full of like fats and sugars.
My wife loves it.
I'm always about cooking paella. So, well, Jeanette, thank you so much for coming on to this. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
One quick, I must mention one thing, all right? And then we can wrap up. So very, very important. I want to just call out, if anybody has listened in to previous podcasts, the very first one that Cole interviewed was Toby Amodio. And Cole and Toby talked about giving an auditor a hug because you think they need a hug. I'm telling everybody on the call right now, please go and hug your AppSec team. Hug the entire team or the individual. They are the ones that need a hug. Give them some support. Cole, that's it from me.
Okay, so I'm going to go one further and say give everybody hugs.
Yes.
All right, get consent, but don't give hugs. It's okay.
Everybody, give them all a hug.
Everyone needs hugs. All right, well, Jeanette, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you onto the podcast, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Thank you so much, Cole. I've really, really enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Secured. If you've got any feedback at all, feel free to hit us up and let us know. If you'd like to learn more about how Galah Cyber can help keep your business secured, go to galahcyber.com.au. If you're new to the show or a seasoned veteran, I want to hear from you. I'm always looking to do better as a podcast host and as a person. So tell me about what I can do better. Tell me about the types of people you want on my podcast. Tell me about if the format's working for you or styles need to be switched up. Do I need to interview differently? So on and so forth. I appreciate you sticking with me for almost 30 episodes at this stage. And I hope I can keep learning and you can keep learning and being entertained for many more episodes to come. So please shoot me feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly to pod@galahcyber.com.au. And if you don't like email, hit me up on LinkedIn.